This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Another year of college, 1 year closer to real life. Another $40,000 in debt for some of you. Another summer to contemplate whether you're on the right track or have made a dreadful mistake. For you proud graduates and you professors and administrators actually working in higher ed, real life is now. All the fears, challenges, and excitement of college this week on The Takeaway. We're going to have a series of conversations called College Compass. Universities and students set a course for their futures. These futures are different, but equally full of disruptions. Is a college degree worth the price, some ask? Are there other ways to learn than being on campus for 4 years? What are the issues of sexual abuse, the distortions caused by dominant college athletic programs, funding support declining, and student indebtedness increasing? Today we hear from Anna Marie Cousse, the interim president of the University of Washington. It's a big school with all of the challenges I mentioned, as well as some of its own. Cousse says as a big state school, the home of the Huskies needs to make sure the door is open to all, but the educational product is not in any way compromised.
The University of Washington is deeply committed to both access and excellence, and the issue of diversity is critical to both of them. The demographics of our population is changing, and particularly so amongst youth. And if we're going to have the kind of educated workforce that we want and that we need, we really need to have access to all citizens, and we need to make sure that they not only get into the university, but that when they're there, that they thrive and they find it to be a supportive environment. So focusing on diversity is the right thing to do. Just as importantly, it's the smart thing to do. But this is an issue that we're struggling with in our society at large. This is not a University of Washington problem. It's not a university problem. It's a societal problem. But I think universities and the University of Washington is a really good place to begin some of the hard work of dealing with it.
And you and your family have been doing that hard work really going back a couple of generations now. Tell me your story and how your even university experience was helped or hindered by your particular background.
Well, I think in many ways I represent the American dream in the sense of my parents came to this country as a result of the Cuban Revolution. I was 3 years old, and they, you know, worked as factory workers and at minimum wage and basically reinvented their lives but managed to provide for their children. I was not privileged economically, but I was privileged in coming from a home where education was highly valued, and there was never any question but that my brother and I would go to college. The question was more of how we were going to pay for it. Both of us ended up going to universities, and at this point, I'm a university president. So in that sense, I represent the American dream, but there have been lots of, struggles along the way, and my brother didn't make it. He went to Duke University after a year in community college, and I think that Duke, very much like Yale, which I went to for graduate school, are these very wealthy universities surrounded by poverty, and particularly in North Carolina, you have a lot of black poverty surrounding the university, and I think that my brother's consciousness was raised. After graduating, he became very involved as a civil rights activist and also a union organizer. And in the South, when you're doing union organization and trying to bring together white and black workers, you sometimes run into the Klan. And he was one of the organizers of the first anti-Klan rally, and the Klan showed up and five people were murdered, and he was one of them. So in that sense, I know what the end result of discrimination and bias can be, and what these, what some people consider small things, the wrong word, a not particularly welcoming action, end up building an environment that can lead to pretty devastating consequences.
And we're talking about an event that didn't happen, you know, in the 50s or 60s. It was 1979.
Absolutely. It was 1979. I was 23. He was 25. In 1 second, an entire future for our family was gone. But, you know, I've had difficulties in my life, but I am very much coming at this from the viewpoint of love. I think that this is about creating a respectful and welcoming environment for everybody.
And I'm sure the people in the community of the University of Washington are thrilled and are moved by your perspective on this. And you're a tenured professor in the departments of psychology and American ethnic studies. And
yes.
Where do you think we are in America right now? What stage? There's been, you know, the Obama presidency has been 8 years to really reflect on the potential for transforming the racial discussion in the United States. I think there was a lot of hope at the beginning of the Obama administration. I think there was a lot of cynicism in the middle. I think as things begin to wind down for the Obama administration and looking at what's going on in places like Ferguson and now Baltimore, I'm wondering if there isn't a tragic but yet invigorated sense of this is something we really need to talk about. And how would you as an academic view what's going on? It's sort of sociology in real time.
Well, I think we really are in a crossroads. I think that for a lot of people, the Obama presidency represented, okay, now we've really become a colorblind society. And a lot of our youth has really been raised with this ideology that the way that you deal with difference is to, in essence, be blind to it or ignore it. And that's led to a lot of difficulties, both in terms of being able to make the most positive uses of diversity, but also it's led to some real difficulties in talking across groups. So you see universities right now, they're more diverse than they've ever been, and yet you often see different cultural groups or different racial groups kind of sitting in their own groups in the cafeteria and doing activities separately. To that degree, I think that this ethos of colorblindness has actually not been helpful. And one of the things that we really need to do to capture the best of diversity and to make sure that it leads to innovations and into new ideas and into success is to, first of all, be able to recognize it. It's very important if we're going to move forward on difficult issues, we have to be willing to take risks and to be bold.
Professor Anamari Kausei is the interim president of the University of Washington. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
And later this week, we're continuing our conversation by talking about the price of college, whether you're a high school student, a parent, a recent graduate. We want to hear from you. What questions do you have about paying for higher education? Or if you've graduated, how do you pay back your loans? Mel B. from Orange County, New York, writes on our website, how much should parents save for college for a child? I've heard of the one-third rule, save a third of the cost of college, pay a third of the college costs from current income, and borrow a third of college costs. Is that a good rule of thumb? And if so, how does one estimate the costs of college 18 years from now?
Hi, this is John DeLugos. I'm calling from Woodstock, Connecticut. I'm a single parent with two kids who will both be in college in 6 to 7 years, respectively. And with little saved for them now and few possibilities for increasing my income significantly, what's the best financial strategy for getting both of them into decent colleges and through colleges? They both do well academically, but that doesn't seem to be a big part of the equation, although maybe it is.
Hi, my name is Kyle Magaravis from New Jersey. I graduated from college several years ago, and I have crippling debt from attending college and actually obtaining my master's. My biggest question is, what am I supposed to do at this point? I make $400 payments, and 85% of that payment goes towards interest. That's just one of my loans. How am I supposed to afford the rest?
Your questions on paying for college, 8778-MY-TAKE is our number. Tweet us at The Takeaway. We'll bring you some answers later this week.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.